This is James Throckmorton, and today I want to talk about malfeasance in office. Now, that might sound like it's a political subject, but it's not. It's strictly biblical, and today I'm going to spend most of the time just reading the Bible to you because I'm going to let the Bible speak about it. We're approaching the spring holy days very rapidly, and there were some things that happened in that spring of the Exodus. There was a day that came along that God told Moses and Aaron that today is the beginning of days. And then 14 days later was the Passover, and then the children of Israel came out of Egypt on the 15th day. That beginning of days is a very important day because that was the establishment of what we call the Jewish or the Hebrew calendar, the biblical calendar, which is probably the best, most accurate name for it, is the biblical calendar, or the God calendar would be the perfect name for it, because God established that first day. If you'll remember in the scriptures, if you go back to the time of the flood, the time of the flood was measured from Noah's birthday. It wasn't set to any calendar system except Noah's life. And this year, I think the first day of the Hebrew year comes on April the 9th. Now, there is another important event that happened on that first day of the year, one that nobody really acknowledges or pays any attention to at all, and that was the founding of the Aaronic priesthood, God's ministry for that day and age. And actually, on into the millennium, we're not going to talk about that today, but that's something that we will talk about later. That Aaronic priesthood was a very special thing. You know, people like to self-appoint themselves to the ministry. It was the same in that day and age. You know, during the Exodus, had a notable example of somebody that appointed themselves. His name was Korah. That's always been a problem. Moses recognized that problem, that there would be people trying to usurp the priesthood. Moses asked God for a little promise, one of the hardest things in the Bible, that Moses asked, that anybody that would raise themselves up against the priesthood, Moses asked God to smite them in the loins. That's pretty plain. But the Aaronic priesthood was started on the first day of the next year after the Exodus. The next new year after the Exodus, 14 days before Passover, on that second year, the Aaronic priesthood was started. God made a covenant with Aaron. Now, he chose the entire tribe of Levi to be his ministers to do certain things. You know, some of them had the job of carrying the Ark of the Covenant, just certain ones. If you tried to move the Ark some other way, it didn't work out. Ask David about that. There was a God prescribed a way of doing it. That's something that people don't want to give God the right or the privilege to do, is for him to say, this is the way I want it done, and this is the way we're going to do it. When Aaron and his sons were anointed, and Aaron had four sons, this is important to realize, they had four sons, and they were anointed, and then the anointing oil was destroyed with a death penalty on anybody that ever made any more. Now, that's pretty strong. That's pretty strong. And their priesthood was perpetual. God made a covenant with them. People have the habit of breaking covenants and not doing the job that God gave them to do. Human beings are real good at that, is doing something else that rather than what God wanted him to do. Aaron's two oldest sons, first thing they did, not the very first things, but it wasn't long till they got to drinking on the job. And they got intoxicated, and they went in and defiled the sacrifices, offered strange fire on the altar, and God didn't take that too well. Misconduct in their office, failure to follow instructions, malfeasance, if we want to use a modern term. What'd God do? He dropped them dead in their tracks. So the priesthood reverted from four people in Aaron to two, Eleazar and Ithamar, the youngest son. And we'll see that the priesthood remained with them throughout the Bible. But the priesthood was, you know, a lot of people, a lot of New Testament Christians sort of believe that modern Christianity is some way superior to something God's done in the past. And that's not only stupid, it's contrary to God's plan. I want you to turn to 1 Samuel for a minute, and we're going to go through and see a little bit what can happen when people don't follow God's instructions. You know, in the Church of God today, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear, then you might understand that there has been a lot of misconduct in the New Testament church ministry in the last 100 years. We could go back further than that, but just for the knowledge of the people that will be hearing this, well, you know, the last 50 years and my tenure in the Church of God is about 50 years, so it I've seen it all. In fact, I think there's a sermon online that I gave at a conference one time called "The Consequences of Disobedience," and so it's the same subject we're talking about today, and I used a lot of the same scriptures because they're biblical. If you'll turn Samuel, the 12th chapter, I mean the second chapter, and verse 12. And here we have a high priest in Israel. His name was Eli. It's the same word as, basically the same meaning as Elijah. Eli, or Eli. The Jews today pronounce it Eli. And now the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know God. They did not know the Lord. And the priest's custom with the people was that when a man offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with a three-pronged flesh hook in his hand while the meat was boiling, and he would thrust it into the pan and the kittle and the cauldron or pot. And the priest would take for himself all the flesh hook brought up. So they did in Shiloh, and all of the Israelites who came there. That was the way the priests got some of their share. Before they burned the fat, the priest's servant would come and say to the man who sacrificed, "Give meat for roasting to the priest, for he will not take boiled meat from you, but raw." He wanted steak. He didn't want boiled meat. And I think everybody can sort of understand that, but that wasn't the way it was supposed to be then. And if a man said to them, they should really burn the fat first, because that's what God had, then you may take as much as your heart desires. Then he would answer you, "No, but you must give it now, and if not, I will take it by force." Here is one of God's flock that says, "I want to do what God says," and this high muckety-muck priest says, "No, we're going to do it my way. God's way doesn't make any difference." You know, all this took place at a place called Shiloh. People overlook Shiloh. It was where the tabernacle was set up, and there was a temple of a sort there. We can see that if we turn back to the first chapter, and we're not going to do that, we can see that Eli was sitting up on the steps to the building that was there. And you know, it's amazing to me that in this day and age, this is just a little aside, you'll drive down the road and there will be a Shiloh Baptist Church. Well, Shiloh is a place that God abandoned because of misconduct. You know, one time I was driving down the road and I nearly had a wreck, I think, because I saw this sign, and I'm not just picking on the Baptist, but it happened to be the Nimrod Baptist Church. And Nimrod was an arch enemy of God and his way. And so you can't. Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss. Let's look in verse 17. Therefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Eternal, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. You know, these priests, by their misconduct, by their improper use of their office, they caused people to hate God's offerings. And Samuel ministered before the Eternal, even as a child, and wearing a linen ephod. And we might talk about Samuel a little, because of these priests' misconduct, God actually replaced Eli with Samuel. And Samuel, this shows you that God makes a covenant and he sticks with his part. But both parties have to, for a covenant to work, both parties have to abide by the terms of the covenant. So had been dedicated to God at as a child. You can go back to the first part of the book of Samuel and read that. And yet was not an Aaronite. Samuel was not an Aaronite. He was half Levitical, and I think he was part Levitical and part of the tribe of Ephraim. But God grafted him in. And this is a completely aside, but with the Levitical priesthood, Samuel, in my opinion, was a type of the New Testament church. And it's interesting that the Aaronite priesthood started on the first day of God's calendar year. The ministry and the Church of God started on Pentecost of that calendar. So it's just something that God's consistent. Now I'm going to skip down, because it talks about Samuel here, I'm going to skip down to the 22nd verse. Now Eli was very old, and he heard everything his sons did in all Israel, and how they lay with the women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the meeting. Man, they were right up modern times, wasn't they?
Yeah.
And I'm having to bite my tongue to keep from saying something here, but I'm not going to say it. And bring it to modern times. And so Eli tried to correct them. So he said unto them, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings with all the people. No, my sons, for it is not good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sins against another, God will judge him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him? Nevertheless, they did not heed the voice of their father." Now, listen to this. Listen to this. If you don't think God is in control of his ultimate plan, now, God doesn't care what kind of insurance you buy or all the little trivial things that people do. But his plan and people he's working with and people he has covenants and made a deal with, he takes interest in that. And if you've been baptized and made a covenant with God, you might ought to think about that. And it says here in the 25th verse that nevertheless they did not heed the voice of their father because God desired to kill them. You remember how Pharaoh was ready to let the children of Israel leave Egypt a lot easier, but God hardened his heart because God had to show his miracles and all the things that he was going to do. And it's the same here. God said, hey, I can't use you fellas, so we're just going to eliminate you. And a man of God came to Eli and said, thus says the Eternal, did I not clearly reveal myself to the house of your fathers when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house? Now this tells you a big thing right here that you wouldn't know otherwise. We know about Moses, but it's talking about Aaron here. Aaron grew up in Pharaoh's house as well as Moses, and so did Miriam and Moses' mother. And did not I choose him, it's talking about Aaron here, out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon my altar, to burn incense, and to wear the ephod before me? And did not I give to the house of your fathers all the offerings of the children of Israel made by fire? Why do you kick at my sacrifice and my offerings, which I have commanded in my dwelling place, and honor your sons more than me? Because Eli probably should have had his sons executed. They had committed capital crime. To make yourselves fat with the best of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Therefore, the eternal God of Israel says, I said indeed that your house and the house of your father will walk before me forever. But now the Eternal says, far be it from me, for those who honor me I will honor, and those who despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Another good thing for us to stop and think about, stop and remember. Behold, the days are coming. And this is something about the way God does things. You know, human beings, we'd do it right now. And God did with Aaron's two oldest sons. But Eli's sons, he didn't do it right then. He goes ahead and tells Eli what's going to happen. Behold, the days are coming that I will cut off your arm and the arm of your father's house, so that there will not be an old man in your house. And you will see an enemy in my dwelling place, despite all the good which God does for Israel. And there shall not be an old man in your house forever. But if any of your men, whom I do not cut off from my altar, and here's something else to realize about God's character. He says, there'll be some of your descendants that I won't cut off, that I'll use them. In fact, if we look at the Bible, Jeremiah the prophet was a descendant of Eli. Learn some things about God. And I will raise up myself a faithful priest who shall do according to what is in my heart and my mind, and I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before my anointed forever. Now, the theologians would tell you that that faithful priest is Christ. In fact, I've had people tell me that. No, the faithful priest walked before God, walked before his anointed. Christ is the anointed. That's simple enough. And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left in your house will come and bow down to him for a piece of silver and a morsel of bread, and say, please put me in one of the priestly positions that I may eat a piece of bread, because they lost their jobs. Now let's skip down to chapter 3 and look. And here Samuel is asleep one night, and God comes to him in a vision. And the Eternal called Samuel, and he answered, here am I. So he ran to Eli and said, here am I, you called me? And he said, I did not call you, lie down. And he went and laid down. And the Eternal called to him again, Samuel. So Samuel rose and went to Eli again. Here I am, for you called me. And he answered, and I did not call my son. He said. Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. Samuel didn't have the connection with God. God hadn't granted Samuel his spirit yet. Therefore Eli said to Samuel, "Go lie down, and it shall be, if he calls you, you must say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant hears.'" So Samuel went and laid down in his place. Now the Eternal came and stood and called Samuel as at other times. And Samuel said, and Samuel answered, "Speak, for your servant hears." And the Eternal said unto Samuel, "Behold, I will do something in Israel at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle." I might mention, if you're a student of the Bible and you believe God, God's going to do something in this age that's going to do the same thing to people. It's going to make their ears tingle. Just wait and see. "And in that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house, and from beginning to end, for I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his son made themselves vile, and he did not restrain them. And therefore I have sworn to the house of Eli that the iniquity of the house of Eli shall not be atoned for my sacrifice or offering before forever. So Samuel lay down the morning, opened the doors, and Samuel was afraid to tell Eli the vision, and Eli called Samuel and said, "My son." He answered, "Here am I." And he said, "What is the word the Eternal has spoken to you? Please do not hide it from me. God do so to you and more also if you hide it anything from me of all the things which he said." Then Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. And he said, "It is the Lord's. Let him do what seems good to him." Eli had the right attitude. I deserve whatever God wants to do. And so if we come over to about chapter 4 and verse 15, we see what happened to Eli. Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were dim, and he could not see. Then the man said to Eli, "I am he who comes from battle." Eli was sitting up on the wall at Shiloh. "And I am he who comes from the battle." Israel was battling the Philistines. And he said, "What happened, my son?" And the messenger answered and said, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has been a great slaughter among the people. Also, your two sons are dead, and the Ark of the Covenant has been captured." Then it happened, when he made mention of the Ark of God, this was a big deal to Eli. This was like jerking his office from him right there. His two sons are dead, and this shocks Eli. He fell off the seat backwards by the side of the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died. For the man was old and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. And at the same time, his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child due to delivery. And when she heard the noise of the news of the Ark of the Covenant was captured, and her father-in-law and husband were dead, she bowed herself, gave birth. And at that time, she died. That's the way God fulfilled it. Now, if we read on through the book of 1 and 2 Samuel, and on, we see that Samuel, at the death of Eli, became, in effect, the high priest. He He was never called that, but he was authorized to offer the sacrifices, do everything the priest did. He is the one anointed Saul to be king of Israel. He's the one that anointed David to be king of Israel. When David was king, incident happened. There were still some of Eli's descendants that lived at a Levitical city. Was two little twin cities. It's where Jeremiah came from. But it was still inhabited, and Saul was chasing David. And David was having to flee from Saul, and his men were hungry, and David didn't have any weapons. And so David flees to this city, Levitical city, Eli's city, where his descendants still live. The priests that were still there gave it David men showbread to eat and gave David a Goliath sword. And that made Saul mad. So Saul comes along and orders the army of Israel to his soldiers to kill everybody in that town. And the soldiers refused to obey the order. Saul has a servant with him named Doeg the Edomite, and he does Saul's bidding and wipes out all of Eli's descendants. So Samuel functions the rest of his life. Now, I'll mention a little aside, Samuel being, in my opinion, and I'll put it that way, a type of the church, but it sort of matches out. You'd think old Samuel would raise his boys better, but he didn't. They did worse than the others. They did what the New Testament ministry has done in the church. They perverted judgment for money. They perverted judgment for money. David tried to reestablish Eli's family because he felt guilty. He tried all his life to restore by having dual high priests. There was Zadok and Abiathar, and then Abiathar's son, I think Ahimelech, or I may have those reversed, but there was two high priests, but it didn't work out. Solomon finally had to change that after David's death. It didn't work out because it didn't match what God wanted to do. So then the priesthood went back to the family of Eleazar, because Eli was of Aaron's youngest son, Ithamar. Now, is that all there was for the priesthood? Did they learn their lesson? No. That was just, and God does things like this. There'll be an in-type fulfillment and then a major fulfillment. Now, don't go off in never prophetic land, because a lot of people try to make everything that ever happened dual, and that's a terrible mistake. But there's things that, well, the holy days that we keep annually every year as we go through the holy days, they have a fulfillment, an in-type fulfillment, and then they have a final fulfillment. And that's a subject for another time. Let's turn over to the book of Malachi for a moment. And we'll see that the priesthood became so corrupt in its later days and by Christ's time that God had to depose them again. And this time he did it completely, only temporarily. Here in the book of Malachi, and I'm not going to turn over there, it says that the time will come that God will purge the sons of Levi like gold and silver, and they will offer an offering in righteousness. They'll finally get the message. We go to the book of Ezekiel and see about the millennial temple and see that they're functioning again, not in the same way, but in a similar way. Now, in the book of Malachi, and I want to interrupt what I'm doing here and just read something to see what God says, because this is something that's probably going to play out maybe in our lifetime. And I want to be in Malachi, the first chapter and verse 10. And this is I'm on a different subject now. I'm on the subject of Edom. but I'm just interrupting myself because I can't pass by this without taking note of it. God's talking to Israel and Jacob, says, I have loved you, says the Eternal. Yet you say, in what way have you loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother, says the Lord? Yet Jacob I have loved, and Esau I have hated. And I laid waste his mountains and his heritage for the jackal and the wilderness. Even though Edom has said, we have been impoverished, yet we will return and build the desolate place. Thus says the Eternal of Hosts, they may build, but I will throw down. They may be called the territory of wickedness, and all people against whom the Lord will have indignation forever. Your eyes shall see, and you shall say, the Lord is magnificent beyond the borders of Israel. You know who the Amites are today? You know where they live, and they've always lived? In Gaza. I won't say any more. Be politically incorrect. Now let's turn over on in Malachi. Chapter 2. This is the entire priesthood. For malfeasance in office, we saw Eli's sons dealt with. And now, O priest, this commandment is for you. If you will not hear, and you will not take it to heart, the glory to my name, says the Eternal of Hosts, I will send a curse upon you. I will curse your blessing. I have already cursed them, already, because you do not take it to heart. Behold, I will rebuke your descendants and spread the refuge on your faces, the refuge of your solemn feasts, and one will take you away with it. And this is the New King James Bible. It's made that a little more palatable than what the King James really says. Then you shall know that I have sent this commandment to you, that my covenant with Levi may continue, says the Lord of hosts. My covenant was with him, one of life and peace. I gave them to him that he might fear me. So he feared me and was reverent before my name. It's talking about the priest. The law of truth was in his mouth, and injustice was not found on his lips. Because, see, the priesthood for a long, long time did a good job, a really good job. People should seek the law from his mouth, for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. That's actually the function of the New Testament ministry as well. God's ministry has always had that job of, but you have departed from the way. You have caused many to stumble at the law. You have corrupted the covenant of Levi, says the Eternal of Hosts. Therefore, I will make you contemptible and base before all people because you have not kept my ways, but you have shown partiality in the law. And the easiest way to show partiality in the law is say you don't have to keep it if we want to come up to modern times. And if you just go talk to the theologians, the Protestant ministers and the Catholics and everybody else, the people that claim to have God's religion, that really have the Western pagan base, Christianity, you'll find out in all Israel that the people that they actually have no respect for, that the world today has no respect for the Levitical priesthood. They look at them as mere running a slaughter pen. And that's a pretty good proof to me that God has able to make happen what he said here was going to happen. Have we not all one Father? Has not one God created us? Why do you deal treacherously with one another and profane the covenant of your fathers? Judah has dealt treacherously, and an abomination has been committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah has profaned the Lord's holy institution, which he loves. He has married the daughter of foreign gods. May the Lord cut off from the tents of Jacob the man who does this, being awake and aware. That's where he dealt with the priesthood up to this point. Now, this is a prophecy. This was written in the last book of the Old Testament, book of Malachi. If there is no God, this shouldn't have happened. But it did happen. It didn't happen immediately. It was a process, because the priesthood had one big important job to do, and they did it. They had to sacrifice Christ as the Passover, and they took their part in that without really realizing what they were doing. But when that was done, and because the nation of Judah, and don't condemn the nation of Judah, because everybody is denied Christ, all these fake Christian religions deny the true Christ, deny the true God. Every one of us, before we understood the truth and repented, denied God. But this happened. The Romans destroyed Jerusalem. They killed God. Romans are the ones that killed Christ, really, but the priests picked him out. The people picked him out. The priests brought him to be killed, did their job, and that was about maybe 31 AD, something like that, give or take a little, because the dates are sometimes pretty ambiguous and different people say different things. But by 70 AD, Rome destroyed Jerusalem and destroyed the priesthood. Now, Josephus, and this is not Bible, but Josephus' writings and history have been proven to be pretty correct. A lot of people like to make up stories because they don't agree with that he's got such detailed history, but he does. And whether this happened or not, I don't know. But it sounds sort of like God. The priests in the temple, this would have been Herod's temple, heard a voice one day, according to Josephus, that said, "Let us remove hence." That's in King James language. But I'm just joking there. But, the New Testament church also knew before Jerusalem fell to get out of there. God let them know. They left and went to Pella, which is in Greece. And it didn't fall on them. And I like to think that God had some priest that had been loyal to him, and he warned them and got them out of there. But we won't know that till the kingdom of God comes. But the things that we've covered today, to me, are a proof of the existence of God, and that his word has been fulfilled. I'm going to stop here for today, because this story is not over, because we'll continue with misconduct in office. We'll continue on another day, and we'll talk about the New Testament church. This has been James Throgmorton talking to you for the Churches of God.